Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the country's largest and second largest grocery store chains want to merge. And surprising no one, one hopes, they claim that giving them that tremendous market power will lead to lower prices, better quality food, and better conditions for workers. The FTC said, hold on a second, how does that square with on-the-record statements that Kroger is currently raising the prices of things like eggs and milk above inflation rates simply because they can get away with it, a practice known as price gouging? The response, dutifully reported in corporate news media, is, we won't do that anymore. And also, if you try to stop us, that would be illegal. It could hardly be clearer that the public, consumers and workers, not opposing teams, as elite media like to frame us, needs advocates willing to go behind corporate talking points to enforceable law. Freddie Brewster is a writer and journalist. His report on the possible Kroger-Albertsons mega merger, its implications, and the behind-the-scenes shenanigans attendant to it appears on levernews.com. We'll hear about that this week on Counterspin. But first, a quick look back at recent press. As the U.S.-supported genocide in Gaza continues, corporate U.S. media assist in Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to widen the war by parroting claims of the aggressor. As reported by Bryce Green and Laura Noor Walton for Fair.org, one salient example was Western media's coverage of the July 27th strike that killed 12 Druze children on a soccer field near the town of Majdal Shams in the Israeli-occupied Syrian Golan Heights. Israel and the U.S. immediately blamed the Iran-backed Lebanese organization Hezbollah for the strike, citing Israeli intelligence reports of an Iranian missile being found at the soccer field. Hezbollah adamantly denied responsibility, uncharacteristically, according to a number of historical observers, and multiple eyewitnesses described an Israeli Iron Dome interceptor missile falling on the field during the time of the strike. But the New York Times appeared disinterested in assessing the facts on the ground. On July 28th, the Times published, "Fears of escalation after rocket from Lebanon hit soccer field," pinning the blame squarely on Hezbollah. The next day, reporting on potential escalations, the Times headline described the strike as a deadly rocket attack tied to Hezbollah. The Israeli military has been known to circulate disinformation to the international public for decades. From evidence-free claims about Palestinian use of human shields during Operation Cast Lead in 2009, to dodging responsibility for the assassination of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh in 2022, to consistently attempting to conceal the use of illegal white phosphorus munitions across the Middle East. But in headlines and in text, the New York Times ignores and obscures this documented history. And it's not old history. As recently as October 17th, there was controversy over the origin of a rocket strike on the Al-Ali Arab Hospital that killed hundreds of Palestinians. In the media confusion, Israel released audio that it said captured two Hamas militants discussing Palestinian Islamic Jihad responsibility for the strike. But analysis by Britain's Channel 4 News found that that audio was the result of two separate channels being edited together. In November, after Israel laid siege to Al-Shifa, Gaza's largest hospital facility, that assault was justified by alleging that there was a Hamas command center underneath the building and that no civilians had been killed. In the face of mounting public questioning, Israel's official Arabic Twitter account was compelled to delete a staged video of an Israeli actress boosting the Hamas hospital occupation theory while pretending to be a Palestinian Al-Shifa nurse. At the same time as the Al-Shifa raid, Israel stormed Rantisi Children's Hospital. And a spokesperson pointed to what he said was a handwritten list of Hamas fighters hanging on one of the hospital's walls. He said, quote, "Every terrorist writes his name and every terrorist has his own shift guarding the people that were here," close quote. Well, that turned out to be an Arabic calendar showing days of the week. It's not possible that the writers and editors at the New York Times are ignorant of this series of deceptions. So the decision to uncritically accept and promulgate the word of the IDF regarding the Golan Heights strike demonstrates a deliberate decision to knowingly advance the public relation goals of a state determined by multiple international bodies to be engaged in a genocide. One would hope journalists would take a stand against ethnic cleansing and mass murder, but the very least we could hope is that they could find it in themselves to resist regurgitating official claims without context or qualification, particularly when doing so advances goals as disastrous as Netanyahu's current self-declared aims. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. In October of 2022, the largest supermarket chain in the U.S., Kroger, announced a plan to take over the second largest supermarket chain in the country, Albertsons, in a merger that would create the country's third largest private sector employer overall, after Walmart and Amazon. A conglomerate of some 5,000 stores and 710,000 employees. What could go wrong? A lot of things, the Federal Trade Commission suggested as they sued to block the merger this February, including less competition, lower quality products, and weaker bargaining positions for workers. Legal proceedings began this week. Our guest is helping make sense of this story. Writer and journalist Freddie Brewster's latest piece on the proposed Kroger and Albertsons merger and the maneuvering behind it appears at levernews.com. He joins us now by phone from the Bay Area. Welcome to Counterspin, Freddie Brewster.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, if we could first situate this in sort of common sense and lived experience. Americans have been seeing the price of eggs and milk and other staples go way up to the point where already struggling people are pressed to the limit. Asking why this is happening, we've been told for years now, well, COVID and related supply chain problems and inflation. It's out of companies' control. I have problems already with that because the notion that companies have to maintain a certain profit margin no matter what's happening in the world is a choice. Companies could always accept less profit or pay managers less if keeping prices down was their aim. But okay, COVID, supply chain, inflation. That's no longer the reality, yet it's still somehow the story. Did Kroger not just acknowledge in testimony that, oh, yes, we did push prices higher than inflation just because we could, but still, if you give us more market power, you should believe we won't do that anymore? I want to ask you about specifics, but this whole baseline to begin with almost seems like a joke at the expense of people already struggling. Am I missing something there?
No, you're kind of right on it. And just to add to that, in 2021, Kroger's CEO on a shareholder call admitted that inflation is a good thing because it'll allow the company to raise prices, pass the cost on to consumers, and keep prices high. In fact, I have a quote right here from Kroger CEO Rodney McMullen from that shareholder call. And it says, quote, "We view a little bit of inflation as always good in our business. And we would expect to be able to pass those costs through to consumers on things that are permanent in nature." And so right here he is admitting that they can use inflation to raise prices and then keep those prices high.
Well, and that sounds like exactly what they're saying they won't be doing, in this sort of PR talk about lower prices and better choices. I went to look up this story and I found a website called KrogerAlbertsons.com, which opens with this, I find hilarious disclaimer, and I just want to read it. Quote, "Certain information included in this website is forward-looking and involves risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. These statements are based on the assumptions and beliefs of Kroger and Albertsons company's management in light of information currently available to them." And it goes on, "Such statements are indicated by words or phrases such as accelerate, create, committed, confident, continue, deliver, driving, expect, future, guidance, positioned, strategy, target, synergies, trends, and will," close quote. Now, companies call this skating where the puck's gonna be, right? You just act as though you've already gotten the thing that you're demanding. And then if the deal doesn't happen, you're encouraging people to see it as kind of nature's path being interfered with rather than public protecting processes being followed.
Yeah, that website is funny, and it's almost like there's any young people out there who are aspiring to work in PR, just you can read that website, you know, it is just like those words that they highlight themselves are rather interesting and kind of like buzzwords to be able to push a certain type of narrative that they find benefits them or will be profitable to their narrative.
Well, what information is the FTC working with when they set up to question or potentially block this merger? Why are they doing that?
They want to block this merger because, like you had mentioned earlier on, this merger could result in poor quality products, higher prices, and worse employment options for employees, especially for employees who are trying to unionize or who want to threaten to be able to go work at the competitor. Just to give you like a kind of a sense of Kroger's market power, in an attempt to allay the concerns from the FTC about this merger, Kroger had promised to sell off 600 stores, slash prices by $1 billion, and invest $1 billion in wages if the merger is allowed to go through. So what this kind of says and highlights is that Kroger is already buying Albertsons for $24.6 billion and is willing to invest another $2 billion to bring down prices and to get more wages. That shows that they already have like quite a bit of market power. They have $29 billion sitting around that they can use to buy another company and lower prices and give people better wages. Well, why aren't they lowering prices and giving people better wages right now? Mm-hmm. That statement itself just highlights the market power that Kroger has. And if this merger is allowed to go through, they'll have even greater market power. And Kroger says they want this merger to go through to be able to compete with Walmart and Amazon, which may be legitimate, but Walmart and Amazon, they operate in kind of different spheres than what traditional grocery stores do.
Right. So the idea that all four of these companies, we as citizens are meant to be excited about a bigger behemoth getting into the fight with other behemoths.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Kroger already owns a handful of common grocery stores that people know about. There's Fred Meyer, there's a Harris Teeter, they own King Soopers and Ralph's. And then also Albertsons owns Safeway. They own
Acme, I think.
Shaw's and mm-hmm. Bonds. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, all of this would put it all under one roof. And then also, if this merger is allowed to go through, what puts it under that same roof, too, are also all those store brand products. Like Kroger has Kroger brand salad dressing, for example, or different sauces or, you know, snacks or whatever. And Albertsons does the same thing. But then that puts it all under one roof, one house, in one store, and that leaves less options for consumers. And some experts I talked to, he highlighted about how, you know, when there's less options, that these companies are focused on profits, and they often use emulsifiers, natural flavors, and other things that really aren't the best to be consuming for the average human. And, you know, that can affect health in different ways, weight in different ways, and other aspects.
Well, among other tactics, Kroger is declaring that the FTC's whole case should be thrown out because it's unconstitutional, because it involves Kroger's private rights. What legal legs do they think they're standing on there?
So historically, the courts have ruled in favor of these government agencies. So, you know, the FTC, for example, and similar with the Securities and Exchange Commission, but they have these, like, internal courts that rule on certain matters. So, for example, the CFTC Internal Administrative Court, they hear evidence, kind of like a standard court, and will issue initial decisions. And companies have sued in the past to try to say this is unconstitutional and has to be fought in federal court, but the courts have largely ruled in favor of these government agencies. Up until recently, that's began to change. Now, the Supreme Court earlier this summer ruled that the in-house courts issuing civil penalties for securities fraud for the Securities and Exchange Commission is unconstitutional. And then also there was a 2023 Supreme Court ruling that allowed companies facing an FTC enforcement action to challenge those actions that the companies deem unconstitutional in federal court before those actions are deliberated inside the internal FTC court. So it's a little convoluted, but those are the two main cases that Kroger is relying on to say that the internal FTC court is unconstitutional.
Well, listeners will know that we've been instructed to see corporations as people since Citizens United, but if I'm in court and I'm deleting relevant text messages, I'm not sure that I could just say, oh, well, you know, stuff happens. Tell us a little bit about some of the behind-the-scenes actions, if you will, that seem meaningful here to this case.
So deleting text messages and internal chats has kind of seemed to become like the go-to tactic for business executives facing enforcement actions and regulations from the federal government. Jeff Bezos and Amazon executives were caught using Signal, which is an encrypted messaging app, but it also has the option for auto-delete. And so a lot of these messages that they were exchanging between each other were automatically deleted. Google executives were also caught deleting messages. So Google has this internal policy where it directs employees to use a feature that automatically deletes Google chat messages after 24 hours. And Google received an order from regulators to preserve these messages, but a judge found that the executives did not properly notify employees to stop using the auto-delete feature, and some messages were deleted. And there's also, in the case of Google, there are messages that have been preserved that show that some of these executives realized the fact that the auto-delete function was not turned off, and so it's preserved in court documents that show that they know that they were supposed to turn off this auto-delete function, but they've left it on. But then Albertsons, some of their executives were using auto-delete features on iPhones. Mm-hmm. And court documents or recent filings from the FTC, I'll just quote right from it. It says, quote, of the 8 Albertsons executives set to testify at this evidentiary hearing, 4 exhibited a pervasive practice of deleting business-related text messages, you know, the FTC found. And these text messages, you know, they allegedly included details on whether selling off certain stores will remedy the merger's anti-competitive impacts. And FTC investigators urged the court to view the executive's testimony with skepticism, meaning that, you know, they should view what they have to say in light of these guys deleting text messages, talking about details about the merger.
Yeah, well, I'll bring you back to that big regulatory picture in just a second, but let me just ask you about media, you know, corporate media response. There's been some coverage. I've seen some coverage. It includes things like the Chicago Tribune's editorial board who weighed in saying that, yes, food prices in America are a real problem, but that it's only politicians who want to be seen as doing something about them that, quote, conveniently focus merely on retail operations because those are price stickers most voters see, close quote. Well, yeah, you know, okay. But they go on to say, quote, in reality, supermarkets are a famously high-volume, low-margin business, and their price increases are downwind from wholesale price increases with those flowing from suppliers with increased costs. And the retail operations have their own costs, dominated by the price of labor, which has seen hefty increases in recent years, close quote. Now, I think listeners can likely parse that. It's supply chains and it's unions that are driving those high grocery prices, even as Kroger's own senior director for pricing admits in testimony that, yeah, we're actually price gouging. But if you let us merge, well, we pinky promise to stop. What do you make of media response here?
Yeah. So I haven't read that Chicago Tribune article, but I'd imagine that they don't take in consideration the billions of dollars that Kroger has spent in stock buybacks
right
over recent years. And so it's not like they're hurt or cash strapped in a way that they're having to pinch pennies to get by. They pay their executives handsomely, they're paid well, and they have billions of dollars in leftover money to buy back stocks to juice shareholder value. I don't really see that mentioned too often in corporate media, but that is a key context to consider when it comes to these issues in food prices.
Yeah, consumers and workers and competition. Those terms get thrown around a lot in stories like this, you know. But like the Consumer Federation of America opposes the merger. The Food Workers Union opposes the merger. State attorney generals who are interested in competition oppose the merger. So there's this gap between media and political rhetoric and what folks on the ground actually see and have seen happening, it seems like.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and folks on the ground know really what's affecting them, and what's affecting them largely as of late has been high prices at the grocery store. And we know from Kroger's own internal conversations that they see these price hikes as a good thing.
Well, while it is hard and understandably for many of us to see past the price of eggs, which is alarming, but there is also, as you write about, there's a long game here that has to do with hobbling government's ability to protect consumers or to regulate businesses, period. I think Kroger seems to see, and other businesses seem to see, a longer term gain here by kind of undermining the whole system.
Imagine Kroger's case against the FTC. You know, this is a bit of a prediction from me. I'd imagine it'll make its way to the Supreme Court, because if the federal court in Cincinnati were Kroger sued, if they rule in favor of Kroger, then that says the FTC control courts are unconstitutional. And I imagine the FTC would challenge that or appeal that. And if Kroger loses, I'd imagine they would appeal as well, because they want to be able to fight this in federal courts, which have largely been stocked with corporate-friendly judges over the past few decades.
We try to always say, you know, notice those down ballot elections, notice those electoral judged positions. All of this is so integral to the rules and policies that govern our lives, but we don't always see it highlighted as those races or those positions as important as they absolutely are. Well, corporate America hate them some Lena Khan, don't they? I mean, we have seen this in terms of the FTC. It's almost like there's something wrong with a person in a government agency just straight up saying, I'm looking to protect the public interest here. It's almost as though we're being told to see regulatory agencies as just kind of refereeing the game between big corporations, and we, the public, are just not in it.
Yeah. And a lot of these executives, they get brought on to CSNBC, MSNBC, CNN. And they praise Vice President Harris and, you know, happy she's running, but they also, you know, pressure her to fire Lena Khan and other regulators. And the news anchors there fail to mention the cases that those business executives or those billionaires have in front of the FTC or have in front of the Justice Department's Antitrust Division, or, you know, some of the motivations on why they would want to get rid of regulators who are have a strong anti-monopoly type of mindset. And, you know, a strong anti-monopoly and a very pro-consumer mindset that doesn't really get mentioned too often on some of these corporate media outlets.
Well, what do you think happens now? You've indicated it a little bit, but we're still very much in the midst of this case. What do you think is likely to happen, and what would you look for journalists to be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, so it's hard to determine on what's going to happen. You know, I think it's really going to be interesting on the federal case out of Cincinnati, Ohio, where Kroger sued, challenging the FTC in internal court being constitutional. The current case that's playing out right now, that's a temporary halt to the merger. Mm-hmm. That'll have some ramifications for sure, but the big one to pay attention to is the Kroger versus FTC federal case out of Cincinnati, and what the ramifications of that will be, because, you know, that could also have, you know, if that rules in Kroger's favor, then that case could be cited to challenge other regulators, you know, their internal administrative courts as well.
Well, and I won't put words in your mouth, but I'm guessing that you think that independent journalism has a role to play here in terms of informing the public about these sorts of things.
Absolutely. You know, independent journalists have been ones that have been spearheading some of the pro-consumer protection type stuff. This stems back all the way from a consumer protection advocate, Ralph Nader, back in the 70s, all the way to our current system now. Independent media is very important in our current age. And if you're interested about the corporate takeover of America and America's courts, we have a really good podcast out right now called Master Plan that tracks the beginnings, the origins of how money and politics came to be. Like all good political conspiracies, it goes back to Watergate and the Nixon administration. It involves the milk lobby, it involves Lewis Powell and the infamous Powell memo, and then it goes all the way to Citizens United and, you know, the billions of dollars that are being spent on our current election. So if listeners are interested in that, then they can check out Master Plan.
All right, then. We've been speaking with writer and journalist Freddie Brewster. The piece we're talking about on the Kroger-Albertsons merger can be found at levernews.com. Thank you so much, Freddie Brewster, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on our website, FAIR.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
RCT Pittsburgh. I'm DJ Chris Wired. This is Breakfast for Dinner. Quick programming note. First up, this week, because we're in random schedule, it's just going to be all music and actually music I played over the course of the summer. So I hope you enjoy some of these songs that I enjoyed playing for you. And secondly, this show, starting in the fall semester, is going to be moving to Saturdays. Same time, 6 to 7 p.m. Just move from Sundays to Saturdays. So next show will be September 14th from 6 to 7 here in WRCT Pittsburgh. So I hope you adjust your calendars accordingly and check it out. Anyway, let's get on with the All Music Show. And as always, thanks for listening.
just had another dizzy spell and almost fell. I'm scared they will get worse and never go away.
You're not alone. 69 million people suffer from dizziness and vertigo.
I wonder if there's help.
There is. The Vestibular Disorders Association has a helpline at 800-837-8428 or visit liferebalanced.org.
Can you repeat that?
800-837-8428 or liferebalanced.org.
Sponsored by the Vestibular Disorders Association.
Everything that happened, we'd rather sit around. I don't need a lesson, you just call me up. Call me when I'm distant, always run your mouth. I don't wanna listen, you're on my case. Thank you.
When this place gets kind of empty, the sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight. Lower the curtain down. Lower the curtain down, alright. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were. Something shimmering and white. It leads you here, despite your destination, under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were. I knew what you were looking for. Might have known what you would find. Wish I knew what you were.
support comes from Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Whether you're looking for a casual place to study or a great place to meet friends, we are here for you. Always serving scratch-made pastries, a full coffee bar, and six packs to go in a cozy cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
future holds. No one can, no one knows. I couldn't tell you if my time will come. Oh, what tomorrow brings for
Street Market.